The scripture readings this morning are from Isaiah, Revelation, and Matthew. And here at the top, it's an invitation to abundant life. This is from Isaiah 55, 1-5. Ho, everyone who thirsts, come to the waters, and you that have no money, come, buy and eat. Come, buy wine and milk without money and without price. Why do you spend your money for that which is not bread, and your labor for that which does not satisfy? Listen carefully to me, and eat what is good, and delight yourself in rich food. Incline your ear, and come to me. Listen, so that you may live. I will make you an everlasting covenant, my steadfast, sure love for David. See, I made him a witness to the peoples, a leader and commander for the peoples. See, you shall call nations that you do not know, and nations that do not know you shall run to you because of the Lord your God, the Holy One of Israel, for he has glorified you. And this next is from Revelation 22:17. The Spirit and the Bride say, come. And let everyone who hears say, come. And let everyone who is thirsty come. Let anyone who wishes take the water of life as a gift. And from Matthew, you are the light of the world. A city built on a hill cannot be hidden. No one, after lighting a lamp, puts it under the bushel basket, but on the lampstand, and it gives light to all in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others, so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father in heaven. Thus ends the reading.
Thank you. Very, very well read. My partner and I have a friend whom I shall name Paul. Paul came out in high school at age 16. His parents, who were esteemed musicians in a charismatic megachurch, threw him out of the house when they discovered a picture of a naked man on his computer. He began looking for love in all the wrong places in order to support himself. Recently learned that he is HIV positive at age 19. Paul's everything that most people would ever want in a son. The young cowboy can Texas two-step to raise every eye in the bar. I'm quite sure he didn't learn that at church. His singing can break hearts, and his own heart is tender and compassionate. He's attractive, intelligent, and charming. When does religious dogma become more important than parental love in determining how we should behave? And what could ever possess parents to abandon their offspring? I'm stymied. What would Jesus do? About 1990, I received a call from the Grand Rapids Police Department. A young member of the predominantly gay congregation I was pastoring had been found in his apartment, bludgeoned to death with an iron skillet. Did they want me to come and identify the body or console the family? No. They were demanding a list of the names and contact information for all the members of Reconciliation Metropolitan Community Church. This was wrong on so many levels. But the predominant message that came through was this: gay people are so twisted that it must have been another gay person who would do this kind of crime. When they finally arrested the two people who killed Roger, the men pled guilty to a lesser crime and each received 1 year in prison. They weren't members of our church. There are far too many stories like these. Here's one more. A regionally well-known 25-year-old female impersonator had contacted me to make funeral plans because he was dying of AIDS. The arrangements were finalized. Surprise visitors to the stage were his aunt and uncle, who were devoutly Pentecostal, the kind who believed that in order to be saved, one must be baptized by immersion in the name of Jesus. These loving and kind relatives, being his closest kin, removed him from the hospital and took him to their home so he could receive valid salvation by being immersed in their water-filled bathtub. He was comatose, so he couldn't comply with the mandatory speaking in tongues. They afforded him that much freedom. He died of pneumonia a few days later. The funeral was held against his written plan in a church that he despised and that despised him, amidst much rejoicing that the sinner had been salvaged. His personal friends and I celebrated a separate memorial service that honored his wishes, and we celebrated his life. How can we paradoxically worship a God that is beyond human understanding and then proceed to boldly proclaim that we know God's thoughts and desires for everybody? Why is it that all too often religion is so uninclusive that it becomes a burden rather than a blessing? I believe that religion becomes the burden when it stops probing with questions and begins to be so definitive. In the play by Isaac Singer, Jewish scholar Yentl's new friend tells her of a rabbi so wise you can ask him 10 questions and he will answer all 10 of them with just one response. Yentl says, "I would rather it be one question and that he answers with 10 responses. When Susan Thistlethwaite was president of Chicago Theological Seminary, she told us that at the seminary she hoped that our professors would not attempt to teach students the answers, but would help us to learn to ask the questions. On the Sunday morning following the infamous 9/11, my partner Phil and I went to church at Plymouth Congregational UCC in Grand Rapids. We were quite frankly burned out on church and hadn't attended a service in over 5 years, in spite of the fact that we'd both been raised in ultra-churchy environments where we prayed more often than we flossed our teeth. Much more. We, like many people in the nation that day, felt a need to connect with something more promising than what we were seeing on CNN. We'd known Pastor Doug Van Doren for years, but anything church was not appearing on our horizon. We went that morning to Plymouth Church and greeted at the door by 15 people before we could find our seat. Welcomed by all of those folks, we came and sat down in the pew and opened the bulletin, and there at the very top of the bulletin, it said, "This is a church that is open and affirming of all people, especially gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender folks." And I looked at Phil and pointed to this and said, "My God, I think we may be home." 2 weeks later, we joined that church and have been very proud and excited members ever since. We were hooked. There are a lot of UCC congregations that adopt the military's former policy of don't ask, don't tell. If Plymouth Church had made that sort of statement or non-statement, we would have attended that one morning and maybe would have come back. But more than likely, we would have just re-entered our existing world instead of having our world changed for the better. What was the catalyst that changed our focus 10 years ago? It was the statement in the bulletin that proclaimed the church to be open and affirming of all people. All people. Even me. I believe we reflect more of our all-inclusive, still-speaking God if every church in the country were open and affirming. But that's not mine to decide. My purpose today is to invite you to begin and to continue a process of listening. The most respectful and dignified thing we can do for anyone is not to talk, but rather to listen. Listen. I always think it's humorous that I stand up here and talk for 15 minutes about listening. As we explore our options and our desires as a congregation, may we continue to listen to each other within this body of faith. Someone has said opinions are like elbows. Almost everyone has a couple of them. My Jewish friends say, put three Jews in a room and you'll have 15 different opinions. That's no different from most Christian churches. Did you gather as I did? Some of you are old enough for this, around the campfire with the other young people in the 70s and sing, "We are one in the Spirit, we are one in the Lord." They'll know we are Christians by our love, by our love. Long experience has shown me since that very seldom do the members of a particular faith body all hold the same opinion. Even if they did express the same thoughts, I'm not sure that'd be very healthy. But part of the joy of community is being able to have different opinions without imposing them as God's law on everyone else. With our different experiences and hopes and dreams and aspirations, even with our highly individualized and creative faith stories, we must have different opinions. Anything other than that is highly suspect. In fact, a church with no differences of opinion, I think, is more likely to be a cult. What is the key phrase that brings people to serious conversation? More often than not, it's, "We should talk." What you mean is, what I mean is, I should talk, and you should pay strict attention to what I have to say. It would be probably so much more appropriate and certainly more productive to say, "We should listen. Both of us." Sometimes when churches are considering becoming open and affirming with United Church of Christ, the members and friends just consider it a no-brainer. Of course we should be open and affirming. Isn't that what church is all about? What's there to talk about? But there really is a lot to talk about. See, there are some frightened people in the church, some intimidated people, who, unless we open ourselves to listening and talking, won't ask, what will they wear? Will we become known as a gay church? What about the children? Will others in the community stop coming if we proclaim that we welcome lesbians and gay, bisexual, and transgender people into our church? What do I say to the people who tell me the Bible's against gay people? What will the other children at school say to my children? Or my grandchildren? Is the Bible really anti-gay? Oh my. Would being open and affirming mean that one day we might have a gay pastor? What do we say if lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender people want to take care of the nursery? Will our pastor be doing a lot of wedding ceremonies for LGBT people? What if it gets in the news that we have gay people? Will the LGBT people who are already part of the congregation be dragged out of the closet with our announcement that we're open and affirming? Those are the kinds of questions that in some settings would be very unpopular and might make people feel uncomfortable to speak them. And I think that we as a people believe that every person has a right to their own fears. And we church members have a responsibility to treat each other as respectfully as we hope to be treated. Each member of the congregation deserves to feel that this is a safe place for them. When Plymouth United Church of Christ in Grand Rapids became officially open and affirming 13 years ago, those good people had spent 2 years of studying, reading, talking, and listening. They felt so secure in their congregational meeting that when the vote was taken, there was only one negative vote and 2 abstentions. But everyone had had the opportunity to speak and be heard for 2 years prior to the vote. That's not to say that everyone will ever agree on a response. What happened at Plymouth may not happen everywhere else. But the conversation itself has a positive effect on the church body. It's an exercise in trust, in sharing, in giving voice to our feelings, and in truly listening to one another on a level deeper than words, of responding to one another from our own reality, and of respecting each other, whether or not we agree. There are no easy answers to these complex social challenges. Pondering, hearing all sides, taking our time, prayerfully considering, are all part of achieving a position to which all of the congregation can assent. Such a carefully considered decision is more likely to last. I have known a few congregations that voted to be open and affirming without adequate study and conversation, and usually the decision is never fully implemented. Seldom tested and tweaked, renewed, or utilized. When we give ourselves the time we need to invest in a decision of this magnitude, we are more likely to put in the blood, sweat, and tears and laughter that it requires to keep us on the cutting edge of new ways to minister to and with people of all different skin colors and cultures and sexual orientations and identity questions, and yes, even spiritual perspectives. Those of us from Plymouth Church that are here with you today are members of the ONA committee, Open and Affirming. 13 years after the original decision, 10 or 12, sometimes more people meet, sometimes less, meet monthly to see how we may continue to encourage, educate, inspire, and advocate within our faith community and in the wider community about LGBT needs, assets, and issues. I'm convinced that this is a result of the investment and commitment of Plymouth Church leadership and members in making sure we want to be identified that way. So please, listen to one another. Secondly, I urge you to listen to lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people. The disabilities community, people with disabilities, have a phrase that has so come home to me. They say, nothing about us without us. Don't be having your conversations and making your decisions about me without me. I like that. I like that overall. We're not likely, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender people are not likely to come to this congregation to talk about it. So you are the ambassadors, the pioneers, the investigators, ready to go out on a limb and ask us to tell you what we need from a church. I have a feeling that you'll hear from LGBT people in the community what we at United Church Outreach Ministry, my day job, heard when we asked several people with various disabilities what we must do to make them welcome at UCOM. And the overwhelming answer was, just treat us like you treat everybody else. Deep. Just treat us like you treat everybody else. You may also hear that it's no fun to be the poster child for a church's new project of inclusivity. Being the token gay couple, having a special section. Thank you, a church that does that. Not a UCC congregation, thankfully. Special section. All the gay people sitting together. Well, that's cool. That's not so inclusive, actually. Or even being the educators for the other church people as a whole, that's onerous to most LGBT people, just as it is for people of color who are bussed in to educate others about what it feels like to be the object of oppression. It's pretty much just seen as more oppression. I would bet that nearly every one of the LGBT people of whom you inquire will have a different answer, a unique perspective, and you will not be able to get a true or false or even a multiple choice answer to your sincere question. What you will get are scores of opinions and a lot of appreciation that you took the time to ask. Be sure to ask people who are not already part of the church what they need in a congregation that would make them feel at home and make them be an integral part. You'll probably hear some things about leadership. A good many LGBT people have been leaders in congregation, and many of us have gifts that would contribute to the church. If your decision-making process does not include a place for LGBT people to lead, you can't really be open and affirming. I always get more of an education than I anticipate when I ask people what they need or want in a church home. Not only will you hear from the community about being accepting of LGBT people, you'll learn a lot about feminist expectations, the need for accessibility for people with physical, mental, and emotional disabilities, peace and justice issues in general, and a plethora of other matters you don't even begin to imagine. Including more diverse people in the planning and leadership processes in the church will make your church a better place to be, regardless of the decision you eventually make about being open and affirming. Just the process transforms churches. Finally,
Listen. Did you hear that? Doves. Or maybe angels' wings. You know, that's the problem with spirit. As Charles Dickens' Scrooge pointed out to one of his ghostly visitors, how do I know you're not just an undigested piece of cheese? A mighty rushing wind. A still, small voice. Or was that just my tummy growling? I know I heard something. Listen to the spirit of life that lives inside you. To what you're being called to individually and as a body of believers. Listen. Hear the whispers. Did she say compassion? Wholeness? Empathy? Worth? Loveliness? Goodness? Righteousness? Love? Laughter? Connectedness? How will we achieve all this? I am the way, the least of these. Hold me, touch me, lift and laugh and love. You are all one as the one and I are one. Continue in my love. Do you believe that First Congregational United Church of Christ in Cadillac is here for a purpose? What is it? Who comprises your mission? Who will you invite to go along? The Spirit and the Bride say, come. And whoever will, let him or her come and partake of the water of life freely. Listen. Listen.